Hey there, welcome to ATL and 29, not a Peachtree Hoops pod where we look at the NBA from the starting point of Atlanta. We are free. Vox has given us our podcasts and our subscriptions and our listeners and hopefully everything in total here. And now we're independent and I'm here recording on a Wednesday night with Glenn Willis after a controversial ending in the Hawks-Timberwolves game. What do you think, Glenn?
Well, first of all, about being independent, I can swear now. Is that how this works? I'm just kidding.
I think you could before. I think we just have to clear it with the podcast hosters and such.
Yeah. So, yeah, we'll see. I'll try to control myself. I thought it was a fun game. If you were watching, following along on Twitter, probably didn't seem super fun, but because both fan bases seemed mad about the officiating, and the officiating wasn't awesome. Ben Taylor's not my favorite official in the league. I'll probably talk a little bit more about what he had to say after the game a little later, but I thought it was a fun game. You know, Hawks fans don't like the outcome, wish they could have got a better shot there in the game. We could probably break that down in a few minutes, but I was entertained. Me feeling entertained and a little experiencing a little aesthetic distance maybe has to do with the fact that I'm starting to kind of check my expectations for what they might be able to do this year. And I think sometimes when you let go of expectations a little bit, you leave a little bit more room for entertainment.
And I think that's what I suggest to my wife.
Yeah. How does that go over?
We've been married 29 years, so okay.
Okay. You got me by 9. So, yeah. So, I mean, I thought it was a fun game. The Hawks are struggling defensively right now. That's a consistent thing. I thought my biggest kind of big picture takeaway was that we saw tonight why just another example, another demonstration of why Trey needs help. I thought he was exhausted at the end of this game and beat up a little bit. And, I think that's why the last play maybe wasn't for him. But even though they put up a lot of points, it was a heavy workload for Trey, and I thought it kind of took its toll on him, especially second night of a back-to-back with travel.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Game. I also think that, you know, he's been on the sidelines wearing a wrap around his lower back.
Yeah,
I think it's some sort of back issue, and you know, there were other bumps and bruises. He took like a shot to the side of his knee earlier in the game. But I just think that, like, you know, with the back thing, you know, it takes him a couple of minutes every time he checks in to kind of get up to speed. I think it takes a second to get loose again. And, you know, I think it's always going to be, as long as he's dealing with it, like, you know, just every stint that he goes out there for, you know, it seems fair to expect that it will get better once you get past the first minute or two of rust.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think that goes a little bit more smoothly when DeJounte's able to kind of get them into what they need to run and give him a chance to run up and down the court a few times. I thought Aaron Holiday played to expectation tonight. You know, it was kind of rough in the first. He hasn't been playing regularly. So, but, you know, he had, you know, a solid impact defensively. The theme I hear every game, every time they lose, is why do the starters go back in no matter what? And I don't know really why we expect anything differently, but I hear a lot about that. They lose. I mean, like, you know, played awesome in the first half tonight for sure and did pretty well in the second half as well. But starters are your more experienced group usually, and especially when they're short guys tonight, the second group was pretty inexperienced guys like Garrison Matthews and such. So, I mean, I didn't really have any issue with, you know, tactics, scheme, etc. They're struggling defensively, definitely. I can't really find the specific thing to put my finger on. I still think it looks to me like they're challenging their players to need less help And I think this roster is not really built for that. And but I think Quinn's, I'm guessing that Quinn is probably trying to kind of shape some expectations about what their defense is going to be about next year and challenge the guys to take more accountability for their defensive assignment. And like I said, I just think this team doesn't have a lot of defenders that kind of map to that strategy well. But if I thought the Hawks could, really make some noise this year, I would maybe be a little critical of that. And I still want them to do well. I want them to get the best seed they can wherever that falls. Play well, get some, get you know, get Jalen healthy, get him some postseason experience. Same with AJ and get Okongwu some more postseason experience, et cetera, and all of that. But you and I have talked a few times, the last few times we recorded about the big picture is the right focus. I think we both believe is the right focus for now, and it's kind of setting up for a bit of an evaluation for what this roster can do. Related to what Quinn wants to do with his team, take that as an input into the off season, and I think that big picture prioritization is still the right thing.
Yeah, along those lines, and actually the point you made previously, I think it kind of corresponds as well. Like you mentioned Trey just sort of wearing down over the course of, a back to back. I feel like, it the long term picture, I think you can kind of project that hopefully Jalen Johnson gives DeAndre Hunter some help as an independent point of attack defender that can have some impact. But I think if you go back to the Spurs game, it just seems like Hunter needs help. Like it's too much. Like to be the one guy tasked with being the point of attack defender that can hold his own over and over and over again, I think has worn on him. I think in that Spurs game, the screens in that game were particularly brutal, with Zach Collins just kind of sticking an extra elbow or knee out whenever he wants, and that's a miserable job to fight over that bullshit. So like long term, I think it's good that I think Quinn has a grasp on things that he wants Jalen to be a person who can give DeAndre Hunter some help in that regard, but the fact remains that, 73 games or whatever it is into this season, Hunter hasn't had any help with that job and he's probably tired of it.
He,
At
yeah,
least
it's,
the way that it's been stacked for most of the year.
yeah, and even if, I guess we'd say it this way, even if the mind is willing or the spirit is willing, I mean, takes a toll on your body,
Yeah, there's only so many shots you could take to your knees. Trying to run
and
through.
then, and when Jalen's out there at the point of attack, I think he does well. We've talked about the fact that he hasn't had many repetitions working over screens, so that's going to be something that I think is a focus in the offseason. But to me, when they play an opposing offense that plays fast, understandably, he doesn't have the reps to kind of, execute at pace what they're asking him to do. He needs kind of the game to be a bit of a slower pace for him to perform defensively on ball at a point of attack the way he wants to now. But I still think getting him all the reps you can get him is good. But like a lot of these young teams that don't win a lot, they play fast. Spurs play super fast. At least they try to play super fast, right? Like the
Right.
Pacers play really, really fast,
Yep.
And I guess that's, a lot of that is just about getting your young guys as many reps in a game as you can by giving them as many possessions as you can, and getting them acclimated to, a pace that's often a new thing for young players, getting them exposed to that. But I feel like Jalen holds up well. It'd be interesting to see if he played a little more with Clint instead of Okongwu, because like I think back to the Miami series, I'll call it, where Okongwu and Jalen were struggling with that side or slash pick and roll, and I think Okongwu is playing awesome right now, but it's just one of the things where just having the more experienced guy, I wonder if that would help Jalen, maybe get a communication to tick faster,
Right.
or whatever. And so I wouldn't mind seeing an adjustment to kind of get some more time with Clint. But hey, I don't know, 2 years down the line, 3 years down the line, Okongwu and Jalen might be starting at 4 and 5, and so it's not like there's no value in letting, seeing what
Right.
those guys can do together too, so there's still a lot of big picture stuff kind of going on here. Hopefully Jalen's not going to be out for too long, but I thought, I mean, the Detroit game, I thought they kind of took care of business in a way that they did against the Spurs. I mean, poor James Wiseman. That was a rough one for him.
Right.
But we can think back a couple of years and remember Okongwu having a few games that looked a little bit like that, right? I'm rooting for Wiseman. Hopefully, he can kind of get it going. But then the game tonight, I don't know why, it's kind of weird, but it feels a little bit like a rivalry when these two teams play each other. Cat put up a big number on this team what 2 years ago, and I think it's kind of just flowed from that in a way. They pounded the Hawks, just a week or a week and a half back whenever they played, and the Hawks wanted to kind of come back out there, but it seems pretty chippy when these two teams play. Not in a negative way. I think it kind of added to the enjoyment of the game tonight for me.
Yeah, they've had some high-level matchups. I guess if we get into the end game stuff, one thing I was wondering is, okay, if we go back to the second to last possession where Cat got his free throws,
Yep.
what do you think of what the Hawks put out there, given who's healthy for their one-stop defensive lineup? So I think they went with Capella, Collins, Bay, Hunter, and Holiday.
Yeah, if you so Bay is the weak link there, and that's not to say he doesn't do anything good. If he's a pretty physical guy, kind of on the inside. Rough on the perimeter at the point of attack, getting screens and all that. But who would it have been if
I
it
mean,
weren't?
I'm just wondering if you could like put a Kongwu in there instead of Bay. Like if you're gonna put a big in, kind of, he's it's not really a guard. He's more of a forward. Like I
Yeah.
wonder what it would have looked like if a Kongwu was guarding Cap for that possession.
And this is something I was hoping we could talk about for a few minutes. So I know that I'm going to force us to kind of jump around, jump a little bit adjacent to your question, and hopefully quickly get back to it. But tonight was the one game that really jumps out at me where the Hawks are limited by the fact that this is year three of a Capella and a Okongwu, and there has been no effort to have any sort of contingency where those two can play together. And tonight would have been the time to lean on some sort of plan that you tried. To kind of be able to get those guys on the court together, because I mean the especially when Naz Reid was in, they were high low in the heck out of the Hawks, just
Right.
kind of just basic, so we're gonna park Capella down here with someone in the dunker spot or on that low block or whatever, and run Naz to the nail and let him get, use his size on Hunter or whoever or Bay or whoever was playing at the four at that point in time, and I just think that. I don't want to go back to relitigate kind of Nate's time and all that sort of stuff, but we've talked about the fact that in Indy it took, I think, year three, I want to say, before Sabonis and Turner ever played together, and then that was mostly experiment, and I feel like tonight they would have been better served by having had some history and some plan and some reps of those two guys together, because I thought they got killed being undersized at the four, and that includes JC against that team.
Yeah.
But just coming back to who was on the floor, I mean, I think if you have JC guarding Towns, I think in the playoff setting, there's no way they ask JC to do that without any help. I'll probably have to look at the play even a few more times, but see if JC could have maybe steered Cat towards some help. But again, when I watch the scene, I feel like I'm watching a coach challenge his players to handle their defensive assignment. And I thought John did relatively well. He got he you know he
Yeah.
So we can talk maybe talk about the, I don't want to talk about the officiating forever, but Cat hooked him kind of. I mean, he did hook him, but the extent of him hooking JC To me, it was like a borderline call. Like I see that not called as many times as I see it called. And so I didn't really have a massive issue with not calling that. It was, but it was kind of a domino effect because if you go back and watch this slow motion, Cat hooks his hip. JC responds by getting his right hand kind of into the torso of
Yep.
Cat. And usually officials will let that be kind of neutral contact, and let that go. And then there was the almost knee to knee or whatever it was contact. And in the NBA, a trip is always a defensive foul, always, no matter what. And I'm guessing that when we see the last 2 minute report tomorrow, it'll say exactly that, but I mean, Cat got the free throw and got his free throws, but I thought it was a play on, except for the fact that the NBA, a trip is never going to go uncalled, never. But I mean, could you say like Cat initiated that contact? I mean, I've seen that be a play on sometimes, but I mean, from when you kind of looked at it again, or what have you, was that a play on to you, or how did you see it?
Yeah, I mean, it was probably a play on, but when you get to the granular level of it and challenge, and I think it's pretty clear what the sequence was. I think maybe the most damning factor for why it maybe should have been an offensive foul is just he had no edge until he did that hook. Like JC
Right.
was moving his feet and staying in front of him.
Yeah.
Like he had no edge to the basket until he did that hook.
Right.
And so I thought maybe with that being a factor in play that they, because there's always going to be that kind of little tit and tat kind of arm contact, but like if
Right.
somebody's got a beat on the way to the rim and they've got a step on the guy who's guarding them, then you let it go. But that seemed like something where he didn't necessarily have a line to the rim until he did it.
Agreed. I know the standard. Don't hold me to the language, but the standard I think across most sports leagues when it comes to reviews is clear and convincing, or whatever language you want to use. And I wish leagues would just drop that, and the goal should just be get the call right. Like, it shouldn't have to be like this massive standard. It's like if you watch the play on replay and be like, the call looks like it should be this, do that. Right? Don't be like, well, it's not wrong, And college, I mean, strange. I don't enjoy college football all that much, but college football gets the closest to let's just get it right. They're like taking eternity every time they do it. But I mean, at least they're trying to be like, let's just get it right, and that sort of thing. And it's kind of like in football, and they're like, oh, if it's a sack fumble, we're gonna let the play go and the defense kind of return it for a touchdown, and then we can fix it on review. But then when you go into review, then it has to be clear and convincing. So, or you have to stick with the call. It's ridiculous. Like, the goal should be get the call right. Don't worry about what was called on for. What was called on for should not matter at all. Just watch the play, make the call, and go with that. And oh, why that's so hard for that to be the standard. Anyway, soapbox kind of a moment for me there. But yeah, I mean, Cat got the free throw line. My favorite part of Cat's free throws, now this is nerdy. It used to drive me crazy that Nate would never get his two centers in to rebound when he was obviously going to call a timeout after the free throws. And we had on the low blocks, JC and Okongwu and Clint, the third rebounder there with Cat at the free throw line to step in. So he had his three bigs in the rebound, which just kind of tickles me a little bit. If you're going to call out, get all your rebounders on the floor, get all your rebounders on the lane, And so, small points for Clint around that one, and I enjoy Clint especially being in the high spot there, not on the low block.
Very good.
What'd you think about the play they ran on offense?
I don't know what I mean, it was kind of hard to it seemed like it was disrupted a little bit. Yeah, I don't think we got a full glimpse of what they wanted to do there with slow-mo kind of sagging off. I guess the one thing I would have an issue there, I'm not sure that I'm in love with Hunter being the inbound passer. Like this was
How do
before
we
any
fix
of it
that?
transpired. Like just in the setup to it, Quinn made some reference to the fact that they didn't like the haste with which the referee gave Hunter the ball. He felt like the Hawks started to run the play before Hunter had even gotten the ball, and that kind of threw the timing off. But that kind of that would be the one thing there, because it looked like they had some options. Like, you've got Sadiq sort of as a cutter down the lane. You've got Bogey kind of flaring out to the backside. I thought, Trey was accessible. Like, if he had taken a 5 second count or something there, instead of just sort of dropping it and letting Trey either go get it or get fouled trying to go get it, that would have been upsetting. But what they did, I think, especially given the fact that like Quinn said, the ball got to Hunter late, like, they did all right. There was the whole pool report about how Bay got fouled on the offensive rebound, and honestly, I thought that was more of a no call than, or more less of something that the Hawks would have a bone to pick with than the Collins getting hooked. But I thought the play itself looked fine. Like, there were options. I'm not sure the Hawks ran it to perfection, and like, the only thing that I would really have a qualm about in the motion that they ran is having Hunter be the inbound passer.
Yeah, same. I don't know who I would have gone with. I mean, I think you could maybe put Bogey as your passer, run Bay in the what was the Bogey action, that kind of screen drawing to the weak side, and then heck, put AJ in. Let him be the guy going down the paint. He's done that before,
Right.
right?
Yeah.
He has a game winner there.
He could be where
So
Bay was.
that
Yeah.
right. So that was an that's an option. But for me, I think this is just from my perspective. I think Quinn said the game, they gave Hunter three options. And again, like we talk about it, Hunter's not always the fastest processor. So three options in 5 seconds, is that really what you want to do? But to me, like, I know everyone's like, Bogey was open, Bogey was open. And if Bogey was an option, they executed that part of the play the worst, because Bogey never got even a real screen. Like Conley never got screened.
Right.
And Bogey kind of got some separation from him, but if he was supposed to get a real screen, that screen did not happen. The thing that caught my eye was the first action was Collins darting to the near side corner, the strong side corner, to get Rudy out of the paint, right?
Yeah.
And that to me led me to believe that Bay going down into the front of the rim was their first option
Yeah, I
that
agree
they
with that.
wanted. And then Kyle Anderson, smart as heck,
Yep.
threw that off. Now, if you have a really high level passer, maybe you can still kind of get that there. A high level passer maybe pump fakes to Trey and moves Kyle,
Yep.
and then gets that passing lane back. But Hunter's average passer at best, in most games, not that, right?
And it
And
really
but
does play to Bay's strength. Like,
right.
if there's one thing you want him doing, it's like him putting a body on somebody. Like, that's what he's good at. Like, he's
He's
not going
really
to
good
move. Like, he's a
at
great 3-point shooter, and like, he's just, when it's body on body rebounding time or something like that, where you just got to hold a position, he's fantastic at that.
He's really good. And he's good. I mean, he's a good rim runner for his position. He's physical, he seals well. And so I actually liked them putting him into that role, even though we all love, the AJ moments this year we've had, and stuff. But I thought that was a good choice. I just think if Bogey was one of the three, they didn't nobody seemed interested in setting a screen. Trey got some contact from Jaden when he was moving up the floor,
Right.
getting the position to maybe screen Conley. And could Trey have fallen down and gotten that one for that's such a risk, because if
Well,
that
that's
you would
why
have
I
put the
think
code.
that I that's why I would have been okay with throwing Trey the ball, because I think if I don't think they're going to call any foul until the ball is out of Hunter's hands, for one. Like, even if he falls down, they're just going to shrug, because
And
they
Trey's,
just hate that call. But
they
at the
do.
same time, I think they were ripe for a makeup call after the cat call. So, like, if the ball is going to Trey and there's contact, I feel like there might have been a whistle coming.
Yeah, I know. I lost track of makeup calls because Trey took the charge on Jaden that wasn't called, and then he got a terrible 3-point foul. There's no contact at all. So I kept losing track of makeup calls. But I mean, I thought the play design was fine. I thought JC did a great job moving Rudy. I thought Bay's timing getting to the front of the rim was good. I just think Kyle Anderson mucked it up. And I think Trey, it would have taken a miracle to get Trey to get a shot up in that situation. Jaden was, I know he had his back turned, but he was all over Trey. But I mean, and I thought what JC and Hunter worked out was fine. I just thought it was a
Yeah,
little
it was fine.
slow. And Rudy got to Hunter enough. And I mean, is that Hunter's first game winner he's tried in his career? You know, I can't think of another one. And there's a lot of pressure there, you know, especially if that wasn't the design, right? But I thought he and JC kind of worked out a plan D or E or whatever it was, and got a you know a decent shot up. And I wasn't surprised he missed because it's hard to make shots at the end of the game when that's not been your role before. And then you know, which you noted that Ben Taylor did say to the pool reporter, Lauren, I think it was, that they missed the foul call on the rebound, so, you know, there. So what can you do? So that'll be on the last 2 minute report,
There would be.
which is, you know, makes you feel better, right?
No.
So when it comes to, so I was thinking about this for some reason. I had to drive downtown after the game, you know, a good hour and 40 minutes, and just had time to think. And I don't know why it's popped in my head, but when I was in high school, my senior year, we had a dog. We had this lived in this old house that was a mess, and all of that. I didn't have the wealthiest upbringing. I'll just put it that way. But we had this wonderful dog. It was, you know, one of the brightest parts of that part of my if we want to say childhood. I was a senior in high school, but she was so amusing because we had this chain link fence in the front that ran along this road that was pretty busy. And her favorite thing to do, she'd do it all day long, was stand at one end of the chain link fence, and when a car was coming, as soon as that car got to where she was, she would race it. She would take off and race that car. And if she won, she'd go berserk. I mean, you could think of it as kind of the doggy version of the Billy White Shoes Johnson dance. Like, just wait, let everybody know that she won that race. And when she lost, she put her head down and was depressed and disappointed in herself that she lost. But she never cheated. She never gave herself a win she didn't earn. She judged her work, you know, matter-of-factly, truthfully, with integrity. And you know, whether it's the last 2 minute report, the replay center, these reviews or whatever, these referees judging their own work, I just need them to be a little bit more like that dog and just be, you know, her name was Princess, so they just need to all be like Princess and judge their work with that much integrity. And then that would just make our lives so much better.
Fair enough. You know what I like? I like
What is it?
AJ Griffin's return. Like,
Oh man.
I think his 2 weeks off did him well. Like, he seems a lot more alert on defense. He's getting into better crouches. He's on high alert on the defensive end. I think his feel on that end is a lot better, and it trans. I think he knows it too. And so, like, it just translates to the overall, like, his offensive game looks better too. I don't know if it's maybe body rest helped or what, or just kind of the wake up call of, hey, I need to do these things if I want to stick around. Not stick around, obviously he's got a bright future, but stick around in the rotation this year.
Right.
I'm bullish. I'm always
Yeah,
already bullish, but I'm even more bullish.
I know I love him. It's kind of funny because, you know, Jalen Williams with OKC was a guy on this podcast I talked up about, like, that's the guy I really want the Hawks to get. And he's had a great rookie year, you know. But man, I love AJ. I mean, what AJ gives you, his size, his athleticism that's kind of sneaky at this point, still maybe coming back a little bit from those series of injuries and all that sort of stuff, and the shooting, and I love it. And then, you know, for me, like, when I've watched him play these last few games, because I remember I asked you, are we going to see any more good AJ this year? And I was concerned that maybe that just, you know, he was kind of you know, done doing his good work for the year. But man, he's been so good these last few games. And I, you know, to me, when I watch him play, it just feels like it's a guy who was like, who had a couple of bad games and just was like, I'm better than that. I need to go show people. I know I'm better than that. My teammates know I'm better than that. That's not who I am. And went out and just like a little bit more assertiveness, you know, a little bit more just kind of mindset around showing what he can do. And it's been great. I'm excited about, continue to watch Okongwu, continue to watch Jalen, continue to watch him, and continue to kind of build pieces around them. I know this has not been the season record-wise Hawks fans have wanted, but I still think there's so many reasons to be encouraged about the pieces that they have. I think Quinn's a great coach, for where they are as an organization. Quinn has coached very high-performing offenses and high-performing defenses, and so I'm looking forward to that. So even though kind of watching these games and seeing them not get the shot they wanted in the game, I still think there's a lot to be hopeful about for this group. But at the same time, I understand Hawks fans who want to see them, would rather see them like pushing for the fifth seed or the fourth seed, be kind of in that range. And every day it's on Twitter, it's kind of like blow it up, and it's like, man, there's a lot of organizations who would love some of the young players the Hawks have.
Right.
So there's just, let's just kind of stick with it. They need to make the roster needs to be better. It needs to have more defense and some more offensive connectivity, guys that can kind of move the ball a little more, handle the ball a little better at the, forward positions, center positions, what have you. And some of that might be already on the roster and just needing more playing time or to be more of a priority in the rotation or whatever. But I'm still pretty excited about the group and about the future. Even if I've kind of checked my expectations for this season, a little bit. So yeah, I think well, they got Indiana next on a nice break here. Hopefully this break gets maybe Jalen back. Hopefully it gets DeJounte back, but they
Yeah,
don't
won't
play
get
for
Jalen back. He's
the days.
they
Oh,
announced
I
him.
didn't see that update today. I had a really busy day
I think it was
today.
yesterday, and they said, reevaluate in a week. So I think it was a week from yesterday
Oh, a
or
week. A week. Okay.
a week from
Yeah.
the day before that. So yeah,
Yeah.
DeJounte,
Okay.
I
I missed
wouldn't be
that.
too surprised, but yeah, Jalen definitely not Jalen. And who else is missing? Somebody else is missing. Why? Oh, maybe it was just Bogey was questionable, and then he did play. Never mind.
Yeah. I mean, the offense is kind of, they haven't played the best defensive teams in the world, and
Right.
this was Cat's first game back, and I still think Minnesota has a lot of work to do to figure out how they want to try to make that work. Unfortunate for them that Cat hasn't played a ton this year, and they missed an opportunity to kind of maybe try some things. A lot of noise up there that maybe Chris Finch won't be the coach next year. We'll have to see. I mean, it's kind of crazy to, I mean, for me, like that the job they handed him this year was like maybe the hardest one in the whole league.
Yeah, it's a really interesting couple of weeks for them coming up.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, but I mean, they got some exciting stuff going on too. Like, McDaniels is, man, really become a good player. Conley's just such a great vet to have around your young guys. I imagine he's helping out so much. So yeah, I mean, you kind of got to root for everybody. Want to see everybody do well.
Can't do that in a zero-sum game, Glenn.
I can try.
You don't root for the Morris twins.
I
Yeah,
don't, but
don't you can't backtrack out of that. You know that's true.
no. What I'm saying is that I don't root against people. There's maybe a short list of people that I can't
Okay, you can't
win
root
that battle
for
with
them.
myself. But I try not to root against people unless they're just like detestable people, right? Like obviously detestable people. But I mean, I don't root against the Morris twins. I can't. I'd be lying if I said when they get a technical foul, like the absolute wrong moment in the game, that I can't be like, I predicted that. I saw that coming.
I see.
But they're not my favorite guys. But I mean, Dylan Brooks is kind of taking that spot in the league from everybody. He's making, Draymond look all level-headed. So, how do we get off on that?
Okay. Well, everybody's gonna love Draymond in 5 years anyways, because he's gonna be good on TV, so
He's already good,
yeah.
and he's
And
gonna when
he'll be a
that's all he
permanent fixture.
does. Yeah. I can't wait for that. Not that I'm trying to speed up the end of his career, but yeah. So I mean, there's a lot for this team to play for. Getting 7-8 is way better than 9-10. keep playing hard, you know, for all of that. Get the young guys as much run as you can. And, you know, I know Hawks fans want to see a Congo start to close games, and I'm all for that. I mean, one thing we didn't have time to get into tonight probably was that everybody's like, start a Congo, start a Congo, start a Congo. And when I can, I subtly quietly say, you know, they have to protect Clint's trade value. And playing Clint on the bench with that contract he has is probably not the best way to situate his trade value, if that's something you have in mind. You know, so let's keep starting Clint. But I mean, I agree, Congo's playing at the level of a starter in my mind for sure.
Yeah, it's just very hard to see a defense-only possession at the end of the game where somebody that good on defense isn't in there in some way,
Agreed.
shape, or form.
I know.
It's
So
just hard.
and I wonder. So I wonder if they come back, if some of that solution is going to be a Congo playing some time at the four. You know, we'll see. It
We'll
will
see.
be until September before we start maybe getting any kind of idea. So, but we did see Clint, JC, and Okongwu all in for the rebound, and even though that seemed like such an inconsequential part of the game, I enjoyed it, Kevin.
I mean, if you can live with it in that situation, like there's a world where Minnesota gets an offensive rebound and you have to defend with those three at the same time. Like, if you're willing to go with it, then, you know, be willing to go with it. I don't know. Enough about that. All right. Anyways, the podcast lives. We'll have to keep recording episodes. I'm not sure the season's long for the world here, but it could be over in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, but even if it is, we'll have other stuff to talk about. We could talk about the playoffs, right?
Yeah, we could talk about the playoffs.
Looking forward to the playoffs. And I'm hoping the Hawks have a first round presence there. So we'll hope for that.
All right. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to do this, and we'll have to do it again soon. I feel good about our future. Rusty tonight after a couple of weeks of not doing it, but a bright future ahead.
Yeah, like just like the Young Hawks.
Just like
Same
the Young
trajectory.
Hawks.
Thanks, Kevin.
Good night.